directing, and working with actors. Welcome to the Midwest Radio Theater Workshop's Technical Assistance Best Of series. You'll be hearing the voices and thoughts of some of our favorite workshop trainers and performers from the past 10 years. This isn't everything they said or meant to say, but it is a good place to start. On this cassette, we'll be discussing the role of the radio theater director and the fun part, working with actors, making a piece of radio theater come alive. This is the art part, and you'll hear the word elusive a number of times. Getting the actors, Foley crew, musicians, and technicians to put what you hear in your head on tape is difficult, amazing, and worthwhile. As you listen, be distracted by your own thoughts and experiences on the subject. What sounds good and why? So, where do you begin? Know your script, read it, and mark it up backwards and forwards. Be prepared and studied. Have a good idea of what you want, and then it's off to the auditions. Directors Marjorie Van Haltern, Vanessa Whitburn, Norman Gio, David Osman, and Skip Peasy all give their advice on how they begin and what they listen for.
I'm interested in a sort of an exploration of let's get some talent focused on radio and let's do it. And even if the person's not quite right, I'm open to what they're going to do. And I have to be careful not to be too open sometimes, but I really believe that radio theater is still kind of new for a lot of people, and there's much to be gained. My basic criteria is they have to be a good actor. They have to have ears. They have to be able to sound natural and real and affecting, and that's it.
I think 80% of making a play work is your casting. Casting is terribly important on radio drama, more than any other thing, I think, because you don't have a lot of time to do it in. You know, with the best will in the world, actors don't have time to do a great sort of head-bashing, psychological, deep investigation, because maybe they have to do the play in a day, or half a day, or 3 days, or 2 days. So there's hardly any time. So try and cast as well as you can.
Unless you know exactly who you want for the role, and you can go get them, you might be forced to have to deal with a large casting problem. My sense is that, for me personally, I don't mind going through the hours of seeing a lot of people to find that person. So there's that old word, the cattle call of bringing a lot of people in. I think that's a terribly derogatory word in some ways, but the essence of it is seeing a lot of people. And to see a lot of people, you need a good staff. You can't do it yourself. So if you're working on no budget at all, get your friends or get other people to really divide the responsibility, where you have a casting director that deals with the logistics. Give yourself plenty of time. Now, you can go one-on-one inside a closed room, or you can go ahead and have other actors read in front of other actors. I've done that on a number of occasions in a setting like this, where I would almost make it the other actors be audience to the group before and have it very supportive. To do that, you have to preface it by talking to the people in the room. Remember, the people in the room, somebody in that room is going to be in your cast. So you're establishing the relationship with the people who will carry out your production from the moment they walk in the room.
Within the first 10 seconds, I can judge this in the first two notes, you know? 10 seconds, and I know whether I've got the voice. Then it's all relationships. But anything with a cast over four, you have a complex series of vocal relationships you have to handle. So we might have three people who are wonderful, but whose voices sound the same. And we can only use one of those and then try to say, but he, she is good. You know, this is the one that seems to work for me, but don't not use this other person. It's just that if they're both on the stage at the same time, their voices will sound the same. It will produce audience confusion.
And in many cases, it's not as much their talent as just who they are to begin with. As David says, it's not that this person, occasionally the character actor who can stretch and reach for a part, great. But in many cases, a person who's less experienced as an actor, but just happens to have the natural sound of the part here. It's just sort of physically how they are, as opposed to mentally what they've experienced.
It's like, for me, give me a good actor. People say, oh, but is she experienced in radio? Is he experienced in radio? I'm not interested. Give me a good actor. I will curse them, and they will curse me when it's 3 o'clock. We've only got 10 minutes on that. And they can't get the fact that they're not approaching the microphone correctly. But in the end, give me a good actor who's a bit raw, technically, on the mic.
if you can ask someone to audition, you should not be afraid to. If there's somebody who's pretty well known, you see them in a play, if you feel, because it's important for you. It's important for you not to get stuck with an actor that isn't really right for you just because you're afraid of them. And I'll tell you something. When I started out, I was like that. It was like I didn't want to ask anybody to audition because I thought the money was too low. So I would cast them over the phone and not audition them. There are ways to audition people that are famous that you don't want to have come over to your radio station. You go out and you buy their latest video cassette and you listen to their voice. And it's worth it, and you should do it. And also with other people, you should have auditions. You should do it. People are willing, actors are willing to audition, and do it. And do it on tape if you can, because it's different than in a room.
You want to get it on tape. That's probably more important than sitting in the room. And I'm very much a person-oriented director. I want to see the soul, and I want to see the eyes, and that oftentimes throws me a big curve, and I strike, because I like the person there, but they do not translate onto the medium. So I've come into the perspective that I always get tape and then listen to it, maybe right there fresh, make good, serious notes at the moment, come back a week later and see if those notes hold water with the same emotion.
My experience outside of MRTW has often been the same as it is here. That is a group of people... a sort of a gang of people auditioning in a very short period of time. For War of the Worlds, I went down to San Francisco, dealt with a casting agency, told them the kinds of people, kinds of voices that I would like, and they got me a dozen San Francisco area actors, most of them voiceover talent, and... I listened much the way I listened yesterday and made choices very rapidly and based on almost no information other than, am I convinced by this voice? The next consideration would be, do I like this person potentially and can I work with this person? And thirdly, can I get a range of voices such that no two people sound the same? And it was a difficult situation because most male and female voiceover talent sound the same, like most newscasters sound the same. There's a particular vocal thing. I had six women read for the part of a newscaster, and only one of them gave me a newscaster, and I didn't even have to hear anybody else because she was the only one who gave me an uninflected, unemotional news reader reading, and that was what she did. All the other women who read for me acted, and I couldn't use an actress in this part. And so I had to, I wasn't able to meet with them afterward and say, I'm sorry you're all actresses, it's too much for me. It muddies up this part, I need somebody who doesn't act. But they should have known, they knew it said newscaster, you know. So there was a chance for them to give that read, and only one person did, and she came up to me after we had read the women and said, I assume that you didn't want an emotional reading of this. Was I correct? And I said, you're hired, you know.
What if, heaven forbid, you have a budget? Then use the money. Don't be afraid of it. Get the best. David, Norman, and Skip give their advice.
If you want to go to name talent, I cannot believe that if you went to a good actor and said, we're doing a radio show, this is it, would you like to be in it? That they would turn you down. But you have to be prepared to make things comfortable for this person, probably. That's probably going to cost you a little money. It will probably cost you first-class airfare, or it might cost you good hotel accommodations.
Hollywood and New York are just so far above everything else because that's where all the actors go. I mean, it's not because the actors are born there, or there's anything in the water or anything. I mean, they just go there.
Oh, there is something in the water. And when I find out what it is, I'm going to tell somebody.
So it's worth considering if you have a major project, a grant-funded thing or whatever. Think about, when you're doing your budget, cranking in the auditioning of New York talent. Because we do this a lot when we have either acting or music. When we have a theme package, there's nothing like the musicians in New York. It's worth the trip because it takes you so much less time to get it done. You know, we've had theme packages or acting things where we've had to beat on people just, you know, interminably, and you finally get something that's so-so, But you could go to New York, spend one-fifth of the time, people are around, musicians especially, they're just sort of shooting the bull, and they just look at the music the first time, and bang, first take, it's terrific. And they say, well, we can do it better. Can we do it one more time? You know, and they do it better. And actors the same way in most cases.
There are stars, and then there are unknown stars. Try to look for the essence of a person and not look for a reputation necessarily or a name. Now, that may be important for promotional or funding reasons to get something over, but don't necessarily rely on it.
Be real sure who you're getting. Many studios, I don't know if you've run into this, most recording studios, not broadcast studios, recording studios will have a library of the stable of talent that's in that market, voice talent, that you can go, and they have their little 5-inch reel and their little resume and picture in the box and, you know, the typical casting sort of thing you can do. Be real careful with that. Most of the time they'll have a range. Most of them will be commercials, what they've done over the years. It's real hard to tell. As Norman said, I think for drama especially, you really have to hook up with the person personally. Look into their eyes, talk to them, get that.
However, there are limits to both the actors and the scripts. Vanessa, Tom Lopez, and David explain.
There is, I believe, a common fallacy, which again some of my colleagues here say on radio, that anybody can play anything on radio because it's only the voice. I personally don't believe it. I think radio is more flexible than any other medium. And I, for example, could have a go at Helen of Troy, which I possibly couldn't do on the television because I ain't that pretty. But I don't think I could play a 20-stone asthmatic two-ton Tessie. A sort of, I could have a go at it and maybe make a good stab. But in the end, what are our voices? Our voices are encased in this body. And part of our voices is what we have trained ourselves to, how are we trained to speak, how we grow up. But part of it is simply physical. What are we in? Are we in flab and asthmatic kind of bleh, or are we in a sleek, beautiful body, which is bony and taut? Are we thin? Are we fat? Are we average? Are we tall? Are we plump? Do we bounce? Do we, I mean, and that comes out in the body. Now good actors can, just like good singers, have a wider range than the average person. And that you can use in radio, there's no doubt about that. And so I do have actors that play, you know, fat and thinner and older and younger. And the more professional the actor at radio, the better they are at that. But it is not true that everybody can play everything. And I look at the physicality of an actor quite a bit.
Even if you get a lesser actor, because, for example, I did something and I needed American Indians, okay? Very difficult. In New York, I found there was a place, so on. I found somebody who was like so-so, but he was the real thing. Took the script home, he worked on it, he came back, and he was brilliant. Instantly, you're hearing the real thing. You're not hearing somebody doing an American accent, and he rivets you right to the spot. As soon as you hear his first word, you're hearing the real thing. You know, and there's that quality, because it's not just, you know, it's part of the mix, it's part of the brew, it's the seasoning, it's everything, it's the sound of voices, but it's more than that. That's it on the surface. It's more than that, it's the culture that people bring.
Take people who seem unable to do something and give them an opportunity to do it. Take people who have been cast in the same kinds of parts and give them other kinds of parts. Rewrite the play so that you can recast it. Almost every play will have too many men and not enough women in it.
Or perhaps the situation where you're trying to cast a couple and they are a married couple and you have several actors or several actresses that could play
there
the part,
go.
But you have to find two that match an apparent age.
Yeah.
Something like
age,
that.
Age is a problem. My play, there were so many people that could have played those roles, but if they didn't sound remotely like they could pass for the age range that I was working in, it couldn't be
age
done.
Age is a very difficult thing to do in, unless you establish right from the beginning, if you have a community radio theater, unless you really, and I emphasize this, get everybody from 10 years old to 80 years old and get them involved in that acting company. Otherwise, you will be doing plays about 32-year-olds for the rest of your life.
Skip brings up another challenge.
The personality factors that we all have to deal with in stations is an issue, too. If you're dealing with people on your staff, a lot of times you say, well, he's an announcer, she's a good voice, I can use them or I can try them out, but then you decide not to, you know. But it's not like, well, goodbye, thanks, send in the next person, don't call us, we'll call you, you never see them again. These are people you're going to have to work with every day.
Now, let's take a specific example about using a palette of voices in a large scene. Listen to Elevator Pirates, written by Michael Heflin and directed by David Osman, and decide how well the voices separate themselves from each other and create separate characters.
Five people is a crowd. And crowds require special manipulation. When you see Elevator Pirates, we've got six people, sometimes seven people, even eight people, in a very small space, the elevator, at the same time. This is a crowd of people. What the author then is responsible for is writing very distinct characters. And what the director is responsible for is casting very distinct voices. So it's really clear who's talking.
Bing! 52nd floor, Rothschild Defense Imports.
Who are you people? What do you think you're doing?
She came on board when you were, shall we say, occupied.
My floor is coming up.
Oh, let me kill him, Captain.
Did you steal this chair? Did he steal this chair?
Well, actually, we just missed my floor.
Quiet!
You're Jonathan Calvin's secretary, aren't you?
I'm his executive assistant.
Ooh.
You could drop me off anywhere.
Don't you touch them buttons, fatso!
Excuse me, do you mind if I sit down here?
Not there, it's the captain's chair.
68th floor coming up, Captain.
Push 71. Let the old guy and the girl out.
Old guy? I'll have you
But, know. Sir, we might need him later as hostages.
Oh, hostages. He may be right, Captain.
Hostages? Did he say hostages?
I think so, my dear.
You must be the ones that stole the coffee fund from 36.
That was me.
Oh, amateur.
I'm sorry, okay?
Michael Dalby offers an actor's view of the casting process. Then Norman Gio offers one final word.
I would say radio drama is a director's medium. And like film, commercials, television, as a director looking for actors, you can probably, if the pool of talent is large enough, and I know in New York it is, you can probably find exactly what you're looking for. What that means for a director, though, is know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Know exactly what you're looking for. Because good casting, whether it's theater, film, or television or anything, is good casting is 50% of getting a good production, maybe more.
Yeah.
That also then, I would say, puts a certain pressure on the director to know what they're looking for and don't waste actors' time.
Absolutely.
If you know somebody is not what you want or are not interested, just tell them. I mean, and I think most people would rather know, okay, well, I'm not looking for that. And they'll feel better about themselves and they'll know themselves, and that's okay. I mean, because that's part of the business.
It's people. And what if they do it, they do it, and if they don't, they don't. Just another note, it's scary to have to tell somebody no, particularly when you know they want the part. I don't know what to say about that except bite the bullet. You got to not compromise the art. If you keep that in your mind that you have a very ancient tradition that you are upholding at that moment as a director or a casting director, that you have to get beyond the personal dynamic and go for the art and hope that the person will bounce back quickly. Or if they don't, then they have to grow and you have to separate yourself from that. This is what it's about. This is the art. We've got to pick the best palette of colors and the personalities that will make it work.
So, now that you've got your cast and you've got your interpretation of the play in your mind, what do you do with them all? Shelley Carlson, Vanessa Whitburn, and Tom Lopez make their suggestions.
What you want to develop with your actors, especially in a radio studio where you've got a lot of peripheral things going on. You know, there's a people going in and out, the recording engineer, there's a lot of futzing with equipment, that sort of thing, is make sure that you've got a setup so that they're concentrating on where they are and what they're doing.
Put your actors onto microphone as quickly as you can. And the reason for that is they haven't got a lot of time to familiarize themselves with what they're doing. The sooner they can get an idea of when they have to move, where they have to move, what the place looks like, the sooner they can ignore it because they know it and concentrate on the characterization. Whereas if you leave it till quite late, you know, they might have got a super character, but they're going to be so panicked by the fact they're trying to use three mics and wander around and they don't know where to move and so on, that all that wonderful work you did on characterization is going to go out the window because all they're going to be thinking about is, God, I hope I can turn this page. God, I hope I can do this washing up. Oh, crumbs, what mic does she want me on now? So put them on mic as soon as you can. And the other reason for doing that is you get a lot for free. If you have cast well, you have cast intelligent people with interpretation. I mean, already in my play line, I got a good cast. Last night, people were telling me things about how they were going to play the part. And I was just nodding. And this was all for free. I mean, I haven't sat down with them and said, no, I think it should be John Barrymore about this or whatever. Let the actor give you something. They come ready to give you something. Let them have a go. Let them hear it on microphone as quickly as you can. Then you can run in to your studio or whatever and sit with your actors or stand with your actors and do a bit of a head bashing and say, no, I want, you know, I think she's a slightly sadder person than this because after all, you know, she's had a terrible childhood. By all means, do all that. But let your actors chuck it at you. I mean, I always say, okay, throw it to me on mic. Let's throw it on mic. And what I mean by that is literally that. Just give me your first instinctive feelings about how it should happen. And then I'll deal with that. Because the big difference between the theatre and radio drama is that you have so little time to do it in, and you may as well get what you can get for free.
Like, I go down to New York City, I'm working with people that are doing commercials, and God knows what all I can get them for, you know, maybe an hour of rehearsal or something, and then we're off to the studio and we record in an hour or something like that. And sometimes we have to develop the character in the taxi going to the studio from wherever, whose apartment we're rehearsing it. Not the best of all possible worlds, but we get a lot of energy out of it.
Acting is doing, right? It's not thinking about it. It's not just talking or lecturing about it. Much better to use it in a format so that it's a give and take and a back and forth. You don't want to be an authoritarian general there as a director. I guess that would be the most important rule of thumb here. Use your actors' creative expertise, involve them, pull them into it in a positive way. The only rules in art, the only real rules in art, are the rules that we discover for ourselves. Now, that's very important in working with actors. And especially if you're working with stage actors who are making this switch to radio for you, for this production. You know, it's really true that nothing really makes any sense to you if you can't really apply it to yourself, especially as an artist. So you want to use, when you're trying to work with your actor there, make sure that it's not just you lecturing them, but that you really are listening to the problems that they're telling you that they're having.
Positive reinforcement, positive criticism is much, much better than negative. You know, it's no good just saying, oh, this isn't working. So what are you going to do about it? Neither is it, I feel, right to patronise. There's no good going in saying, lovely, lovely, darling. Mm. You know, when it's quite clear that you hate it, but the notes you're going to give are going to show that you hate it. So you start from the principle that you would not have cast that actor or actress if you weren't actually excited by what they could do. So you take on board that compliment.
Somebody's got something there that they've been working on, pieces and little treasures. You'd be a fool to cap them off, to think that you could see that jewel within them as fast as them. Provided the actor's not into an egotistical thing themselves, but if they're an open person, you want to have that flow. But you can be afraid of that flow because there's that subtle moment where the challenge comes, and it always comes inevitably between an actor and director. There's a challenge. It comes. You try to go and cast, and you break the back of that challenge right away. I want you to be moldable. Part of it is you give me everything you've got, and that gives the actor room to let it out. But if you don't let that settle before performance, you lose it. So you got to have a period of time where it sets, but you have to have a period of time of moldability. You have to know that there's a delineation point. So you can say, okay, we're going to be open to change for the next 48 hours. But after that, it's set. And when I set it down, don't change it. Don't come back and say, I want to do this. You live with it and do the best you can. And you set that out at the beginning, at the outset. You do that, a person can shape their mind and fall into it. And at that moment, most people will just say, okay, it's over, we can't change it anymore. Don't change it, because the other actors know that this is the point where they can trust it. It's going to be like that every time. Before that, they can feel that, hey, it doesn't feel good. Can we try that again, Doc? I mean, I want something else out of this. And they have the freedom to say it. And you have the freedom to sit back and let it happen. Because you're not fighting the control factor in your own mind. When am I going to gain control of this?
I don't know how one actually directs that elusive communication, if it exists and if it doesn't. the actor pulls it out of the bag by themselves. That elusive communication between actor and director is a very precious thing to me when it works. It is a very warming experience. It is like playing playing a good instrument. A good actor is like the most subtle instrument that one can suggest things to, and that they will, by magic, turn up with the goods. If you start on the right footing, I think it is true to say that you can be quite tough. I mean, the actors that I work with a lot who know what I think about what they do, which is that they are bloody marvellous, I will go in and I say, I hate it, it's crap, it's rubbish. I wouldn't dream of saying that to somebody I've not worked with very much initially, because we have to build up a confidence, a trust in each other. Once that trust and confidence is built, which means underlying everything I say, I think you are shit hot, really good. You can then go to an actor and you say, hey, this is a mess, this scene. What is going on here? Let's look at this. This is not working. And know that they will come with you, because underlying that, there is this unspoken constant, but I know that you can do it. And we can pull it off. We've pulled it off before, and it's just that maybe I haven't given you enough guidance, or we've gone off in certainly in the wrong direction. We you're playing it as a kind of a punchy, aggressive person, when really what it should possibly be is a withdrawn person. There's something fundamental wrong. Let's talk about that. Let's think about that. But you will only get to that level with an actor if you're kind of in love with them. As the nearest I can get to it. I mean, in the sense that they can't, in the end, you know that the performance you'll get will be good. What you're after is the brilliant.
It gets down to people, and then there's a pretentious relationship to the society that takes you. You are the person now, and we're going to focus on that dynamic and make you something. That can be awfully heady stuff and take you far afield of the art.
The director has literally hundreds of details and decisions to attend to during a production. Every cut, every retake, every turn. But remember, you, the director, are not alone. You have the resources of the actors, the crew, and the equipment to help. It's your job to figure out how to use them to get down on tape what you hear in your head. Okay, take a breath, stretch, and flip the tape.
Is this the Department of Lost Dogs?